Off the ball, GAA.
What a game of football. What a game of football for the neutral, I suppose, watching it at home on TV. What a day for our supporters of Westmeath and the people of Westmeath.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join. Off the Ball's Football Daily.
Welcome along to Wednesday's Football Daily. I'm David Wilson. Coming up today, Liverpool move closer to appointing Arne Slot's replacement as Andoni Iraola looks set to take over. Celtic close in on appointing Robbie Keane as their new boss despite some fan backlash. And with just 8 days until the World Cup, Scotland and England continue their preparations in Florida. Liverpool have reached a verbal agreement with Andoni Iraola to make him their new head coach. Iraola quickly emerged as a clear favourite to take over at Anfield after Saturday's departure of Arne Slot. The Basque is expected to join on a 2-year contract in line with both of the deals he signed while in charge of Bournemouth. Iraola had been due to leave the South Coast club when his terms expired at the end of this month, and work continues over the makeup of his backroom staff. He wants to be accompanied by Pablo Della Torre, Tommy Elphick, Sean Cooper and Tom Webber, who are all members of his coaching and backroom staff at Bournemouth. If all goes to plan, Liverpool will appoint and present Iraola before the week concludes. Discussions with Iraola have been led by sporting director Richard Hughes, who knows Iraola well, having appointed him as Gary O'Neill's successor at Bournemouth in the summer of 2023. During his 3 years in charge at Bournemouth, Iraola oversaw 12th, 9th and 6th place Premier League finishes, as well as securing Europa League qualification for the first time in their history. Meanwhile, Liverpool legend John Barnes has called for patience from supporters if Iraola becomes the new head coach at Anfield. Barnes says that he will need to be given time to make his mark.
If he comes, I'll support him 100%. If he loses the first 3 matches, I'm still going to support him. But will the fans? That's the problem. The fans are too quick to form an opinion, and particularly as he won the league in his first year on his slot. I think that the fans should have backed him more.
Last night on the football show, Rhys Jolly and Dion Fanning joined Owen Sheehan. And the trio discussed the toxicity that surrounded Slot and the relationship with the fans in his last weeks in the job at Anfield.
The idea that Slot was going to start next season seemed to be something that a lot of Liverpool fans were resigned to at the end of the Premier League year, as if there would be, you know, this 5-10 game window where he might be able to continue as Liverpool manager. Now that it's all kind of done and dusted, that always felt quite fanciful.
It always felt quite dangerous, certainly, because it ran the risk of a repeat of what Manchester United had with Erik ten Hag a couple of years ago, where he limped through to the end of the season. It surprised a lot of people. He kept his job and then he's gone October or November. Liverpool had that with Brendan Rodgers a decade ago. In a way, they got lucky in that when Rodgers went, Jurgen Klopp was available. And who obviously proved an outstanding appointment. In the case of Slot, he genuinely thought until the last 24, 48 hours that he was keeping his job. It took him aback. I think he put a lot of store in his relationship with Richard Hughes, and he believed Liverpool were planning with him. But as Dion said, the way they finished the season was really damaging, and I think that what I would say in slightly in defence of Liverpool is I think they probably wanted to keep Slot for quite a while. But in the last few weeks of the season, I wanted, as an outside observer, I wanted to see evidence that next season would be better. And there just wasn't any. The Tottenham game, the Chelsea game, the Aston Villa game on that Friday night where they were really poor. And so the only grounds to think it would be better were that A, players would be fit, and B, they might or might not have a good summer in the transfer market. Well, neither of those is strictly related to who the manager is at all. And Richard Hughes, who isn't at Anfield all the time, but he was there for the Chelsea game when the fans booed Slot for the substitution of Rio Ngamoah, which was actually a perfectly justified substitution because Ngamoah had cramp, but it showed the depth of the feeling against him. And he was there again for the Brentford game. And I think the way the fan base had turned on Slot would have made it very, very difficult for him to carry on. Certainly a lot of the stuff online I thought was, I really didn't like at all. I thought it was really vitriolic and really unpleasant. Fans are obviously entitled to have their view as to whether they think a manager is the right manager for the club or not. But the climate with the fan base was one thing that I think definitely made it hard of him to continue, but also just the way the season ended. And there were a lot of problems at Liverpool this year, and I certainly don't think Arne Slot caused all of them. But the issue was he didn't seem to have too many answers and he didn't seem to have too many solutions.
And that is now available for you to listen back to in full in your OTB Football podcast feed. And if you don't want to miss a single second of our football coverage ahead of the World Cup, you can become a member and sign up at offtheball.com/join. Dermot Desmond has reportedly held talks at Robbie Keane as Celtic step up their efforts to appoint their next permanent manager. Former Republic of Ireland striker Keane appears to be in a two-way battle with veteran Martin O'Neill to lead the Hoops into next season. After meeting with Keane to discuss the vacancy, Desmond, Celtic's largest shareholder, is expected to hold a further conversation this week with O'Neill. The Hoops have been in a state of managerial flux for much of the past year, with O'Neill summoned to step into the breach twice, following the departures of Brendan Rodgers in October and Wilfred Nancy in January. Assisted by the duo of Sean Maloney and Mark Fotheringham, the 74-year-old took charge of 8 matches on an interim basis last autumn and then returned to take the reins from January until the end of the campaign, solidifying his status as a hero in the eyes of Celtic supporters by leading them to an unlikely double. While it was widely expected that O'Neill would be stepping aside this summer to make way for a new manager, he is still under consideration by the Parkhead hierarchy. The emergence of Keane, who left his role as Ferencvaros boss last month, as the main alternative to O'Neill, has been met with hostility among some supporters. The 45-year-old, who had a fruitful 16-goal loan stint at Celtic in the first half of 2010, was heavily criticised in his native Ireland for choosing to stay in Israel as manager of Maccabi Tel Aviv following the outbreak of war in Gaza in 2023. Celtic supporters are traditionally aligned with Palestine, and a statement was released on Tuesday by the Celtic Fans for the Liberation of Palestine group opposing the potential appointment of Keane. It said the Irishman's decision to manage Maccabi Tel Aviv during the genocide in Gaza is impossible to ignore, and that at a time when Celtic requires unity and collective purpose, this appointment would be deeply divisive among the support. Keane has just completed a 17-month stint as boss of Ferencvaros, where he won the title in his first season, and he finished second behind Gyuri in his only full season at the helm. The former Wolves, Leeds, Tottenham and Liverpool forward led the Hungarian side to the last 16 of the Europa League, where they were eliminated by Braga in March. Prior to taking charge of Tel Aviv 3 years ago, Keane had a brief stint as manager of Indian side ATK in 2018, before assistant coaching roles with Middlesbrough, Ireland and Leeds. Manchester United have reached an agreement with Atalanta to sign Brazilian midfielder Ederson. In an early statement of intent ahead of next season, the 26-year-old will move to Old Trafford for €40.5 million fixed fee, plus €4.5 million in potential add-ons. Personal terms are in place and a proposed contract until June 2030, while there is an option to extend by an additional 12 months. Ederson must still undergo medical, and all parties intend to complete the switch in early July. He's been long targeted by a host of top clubs, but prioritised United, and given he'd become a free agent in the summer of 2027, they were able to negotiate a price considerably lower than figures quoted in previous markets. It would represent a purposeful start to the transfer window by United, who need to bolster their midfield amid Casemiro's exit. They are likely to seek further reinforcements in that area of the pitch, given the possibility of further departures and Michael Carrick's side qualifying for the 2026-27 Champions League. Arsenal's style of play has continued to generate much conversation around their place in the European football landscape. On the football show on Tuesday evening, Dion Fanning told Owen Sheehan that Mikel Arteta's side are a bureaucracy pretending to be a football team.
You know, you play in this utterly predictable way and the utterly predictable happens. You know, that's the commentary on it, rather than saying, oh my God, I can't believe Arsenal are playing like this. And I think next season they will obviously try and, you know, if they get better players, if they get a better striker.
How come the utterly predictable won them a Premier League title?
What?
How come the utterly predictable won them the Premier League title?
Because of how well they managed it. And how well they managed the Premier League, and how well they managed every external in the Premier League, including set pieces, including their constant phone calls to the PGMOL, all this stuff that actually, you know, this is why one of the most watched videos since Saturday has been the referee. Like, this tells you everything about Arsenal, that, you know, a viral clip from the European Cup final, from the Champions League final, it's a referee blowing up before a player can take a corner. Because that sums up, it sums up not just how Arsenal play, but it sums up how they have played in the Premier League. Arsenal are a bureaucratic team. They are a bureaucracy pretending to be a football team. And that is a bureaucracy is stifling and it is limiting, and the bureaucracy's enemy is creativity and free expression.
The bureaucracy's enemy is frivolity.
Well, that's and that too. And so this is what Arsenal are, and it's the reason, and in the final, it just happened that they couldn't get away with it the way they got away with it because they won the Premier League, but the way they managed it in England.
I don't agree with the it was an entirely predictable outcome point, like an entirely predictable style of play that led to an entirely predictable outcome. I just don't subscribe to that
but
whatsoever.
No, okay, because
they might well have won that game on Saturday.
They could have won the game, yeah, and that will be the argument that Arteta makes to kind of continue along this path, with a few little alterations, with a few decorations on it. But he will say, yes, the penalties went down to it. If they could have gone a different way, it was a marginal, very marginal outcome. And if they'd gone a little bit differently, they'd be champions of Europe. So that's your point. But when it doesn't happen, you are entitled, like. And this is a debate about having a commentary based on a result. But I'm afraid when you play like Arsenal, there is only really the only real justification for that way of playing is victory.
And remember to click follow in your OTB Football podcast feed so you don't miss a single update from our football coverage.
You could hear a pin drop in the lobby. It was that quiet.
The referee letting play continue. One last throw.
It's obviously hard now because of the way that's all ended, but.
After Scales wins
ahead. I'll have that forever.
There's the goal! That's Troy Parrott! That is unbelievable!
Inner Drive, Episode 1 with Troy Parrott, out now on YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts. Brought to you by Allianz, a proud sponsor of Irish sport.
Off the Ball.
John McGinn says it feels incredible to be at a World Cup with best mate Andy Robertson. They grew up in the Celtic youth ranks and are now with Scotland for their first appearance at the final since 1998. Robertson's on the lookout for a new club after leaving Liverpool. McGinn says that he's got plenty still to offer.
What he's achieved at Liverpool has been incredible, and for me, he doesn't like listening to it, but he was a massive inspiration to me to come down to England and prove he could cut it against the world's best. So really looking forward to seeing where he goes next, but hopefully and selfishly for us, he'll be at his best at the World Cup.
Scotland midfielder Ryan Christie says they risk coming unstuck if they underestimate Haiti in their World Cup opener. Steve Clark's side are 43rd in the FIFA World Rankings, while Haiti are 82nd on the list. Haiti beat New Zealand 4-0 last night in a World Cup warm-up match. Christie says the Scots won't be taking them for granted.
On paper, you look at that game as the one you need to try and win, but every team that's going to World Cups, they're on merit. So, you don't come up against an easy team at all, and credit to Haiti for them qualifying as well. So it'll be a tough game.
Kobbi Mainoo believes England can win the World Cup this summer as he prepares to live out a boyhood dream. The Manchester United midfielder was a part of a group that trained for the first time at the pre-tournament camp in Florida yesterday. Mainoo, who started England's Euro 2024 final defeat to Spain, has full confidence his side can lift the trophy on July 19th.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. I mean, I feel like everyone in the squad, the staff, everyone believes we can win it, but that doesn't come easy, and it's going to come first game, second game, we have to build and build and build, and I think that's what we have to focus on.
Jordan Henderson says he never gave up hope of playing in a fourth World Cup with England. The 35-year-old has been included in the squad for the upcoming tournament in North America after helping Brentford to a ninth place finish in the Premier League. Henderson's had a turbulent few years, which included time playing in Saudi Arabia and the Netherlands.
Of course, the last few years has been a bit of a roller coaster, to say the least, but I've worked very hard for the last few years to be in this position, and made a lot of sacrifice, and I'm just very grateful and honoured to be here and be a part of it.
England striker Ollie Watkins admits the weather will take some getting used to ahead of the World Cup. Thomas Tuchel's side trained in 32 degree heat in their first session in Miami. Watkins says they'll have to acclimatise quickly.
Oh, it's a struggle. First day, it's a struggle, but look, it's good. It's going to get us prepared for it. And what better way to be here in Miami?
Ghana forward Brandon Thomas Asante says they're ready to shock England in the group stage of the World Cup. The African side were held to 1-1 draw by Wales in one of their tournament warm-up games last night. Ghana will face Panama in their tournament opener, and Thomas Asante knows they must focus on that match.
We're not sleeping on that, and we know we've got a job to do there. But then when it comes to the England game, of course, there's a lot of different interests in terms of, you know, players who are playing in England, who born here or whatever. But we're all wanting to do a job, and we believe in our squad that we've got what it takes to cause an upset.
Carlow Ward's Republic of Ireland side continue their World Cup qualifier preparations in Cork today. They take on the Netherlands on Friday evening in Parky Cueve, where a win would give them a chance of qualifying for next summer's tournament in Brazil directly. Aileen Clancy is the only League of Ireland representative in the squad, as she continues to play her football with Shelburne, despite links to teams in the UK. Clancy says that she's looking forward to showing what the league is all about.
Responsibility, yes, but I think it's also a great privilege to be in this squad and picked and representing the League of Ireland. I think it's, yeah, there is a sense of responsibility that I'd come in and show what the League of Ireland is about, and that, yeah, that we're able to come in and compete at this level. So, yeah, I'm really, really happy to be in here and hopefully show up what I can do, and that there's also been growth in the league that we are able to compete when we come into camp.
And remember, you can listen to live commentary of Friday's game at Holland and Cork. Coverage will begin at 7 o'clock on Off the Ball on Newstalk and the Go Light app. And Stephen Doyle will be joined in the commentary box by Pearl Slattery. That is about all we have time for on today's Football Daily. I'm David Wilson, and we'll be back with more tomorrow.
To unlock much more from the OTB football feed, sign up at offtheball.com/join now.